Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to your weekly wellness radio for Mexicali and Imperial Valleys. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. And our phone number here at the station is area code 760-337-8874.
Whoa. You better reload that program. It's degrading.
I know.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Let's Talk About It.
By the way, this is Scott. This is Maria, and he is Scott.
Yes. Hi, good morning. New listeners, that's our names. Long-time listeners, I bet you already knew that. hey, I got a new jingle. How about wellness worth listening to? Is that cool? Because lately people have been coming up to me and rolling up on me and saying, I caught the show today. It was a great show. Who was that guest? They were fantastic, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, wow. So.
Somebody is listening to
us. Hey, yeah.
Good morning to everybody that's listening to us.
You think we are like really self-esteem people, but no, actually stuff like that makes a difference in our lives. Anyway, so thank you, and we'll bring it to you today, too. We got Loretta Granillo in today. She's a social worker from Department of Social Services, Children's and Families Division, Child Protective Services.
Yes.
You have to work 5 years in the county before you're able to remember that much. Lots of training.
Better involved. Known as CPS.
Better known as CPS, not County Properties Services.
That's true.
The other CPS.
It's the Child Protective Services.
Child Protective Services. Yep. Now, you know, probably, I don't know, 25-30% of the listeners just had like a little twinge of fear hearing that. But you guys aren't really that scary, right?
We try not to be.
I mean, we've got you locked in kind of a protective cage thing.
Well, here's the reality. You said that 20%, you know, have a 30% got a little cringe, or like, oh, you know, fear. And then there's the other part that, no, it's not the fear, but the not hatred, but just the dislike of CPS because of, you know, of our, why are you invading into my life? You know, that whole government.
Like a trip to the dentist, only worse.
You know, like a government thing. Your government's not going to tell me what to do with my kids.
Civil libertarian.
Yes.
Nice. I like it.
Exactly.
It's a political, year, okay?
The least people in the world.
Well, we do try to work with families. We try to judge them based on what each and every individual family. A lot of people sit there and think, oh, well, you go out and remove kids that don't need to be removed. And then we get the calls also, which are, you didn't remove these kids and they need to be taken.
So there's never any pleasing anybody, yeah. Is there?
It's difficult. And we try to judge each and every family based on what's happening in their family at that time. And some of our decisions are made on the history that we have with the family, whether we've offered the family services before, whether it was what type of services we offered the family, mm-hmm. whether it was a voluntary program, whether it was a court program, a court-ordered service that we had to do. So we base it on a lot of things. It's not like we just go out there and, okay, this is what's happening in this family. We're taking these kids.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm reminded of the urban legend that McDonald's was using earthworms to make hamburgers, right? I mean, it was like a big story, and everybody was like, oh, my goodness.
I don't remember that
how
one.
How gross is that? And
who was that?
I'm old, okay? So this goes way back. Anyway, the bottom line point, as you ended up and did research on this, was that earthworms cost like $8 a pound. They're very expensive. And so, no, McDonald's wasn't doing that. I think the same thing applies to you guys in terms of removing kids.
Yeah.
Urban legend, you can't remove the kids, all of them, because it would be too expensive. It would cost beyond the service capacity of Department of Social Services, period.
Oh, heck yeah.
So removing children isn't your...
It's a last resort.
Exactly.
The only time we will remove kids is if the kids are deemed in danger and we are not able to put a safety plan in place to be able to keep the kids at home.
Okay, so the key is
then having a safety plan.
The key is having the safety and well-being of the children intact for us to be able to leave them with their parents.
Okay, so when you receive a CPS call,
uh-huh.
Do most of these calls come from mandated reporters, or is it a mix? Or
it's a mix. We get them from everywhere. We get them from friends. We get them from families. We get a lot of custody calls with exes. We get a lot from mandated reporters. We get them from schools, from doctor's offices, from hospitals. Our calls come in from everywhere. And anybody can make a call.
You know, if an ex calls, you're kind of wondering why they didn't make the call before they were an ex, huh?
Exactly.
Oh, ouch.
I've had calls where it was like, well, she's not feeding my kids properly. And it's like, what do you mean she's not feeding your kids properly? Well, she takes them to McDonald's every night.
For wormy hamburgers.
For wormy hamburgers. And it's like, okay, well, you know, what was your pattern when you guys were together? Da-da. Well, we ate out all the time. It's like, okay, so what's changed?
Yeah, other than the cost of eating out all the time.
I mean, exactly.
That's gone up. The gas ticket to McDonald's is now like a major investment.
It's like all of a sudden, yeah. Now that they're an ex, they want to make sure their kids are having their vegetables and their starches and all this stuff.
Mm, so what is the main reason?
And McDonald's isn't child abuse. Let's clear that up right away.
So what is the main reason you might take children away?
A lot of our cases deal with drugs and alcohol. I'd say a good 80% of the calls we get are in regards to children being neglected because the parents are using substances.
So it's neglect.
Neglect is a large percentage of what our calls
are. What would you see as neglect? I mean, what is neglect? Is it because, you know, for example, they're taking them out to eat fast food? Or what would be a neglect?
As long as the parent's providing the minimal level of care, they're getting food, they're clean, they're getting their medical care, they have a place to live, stuff like the minimal needs for a person to be able to sustain.
Mm-hmm. So just I mean.
So that means that if the clothes are old, not dirty, but old and
That's fine. I mean, some parents, that's all they can afford is the secondhand store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as long as, you know, they're not holy, where the kids are going out in the rain and stuff like that, mm-hmm. you know, as long as they're presentable, that's, you know, that's fine.
But you said 80% of those neglect calls are related to substance use. Now, in my head, I'm thinking, you know,
that's a lot.
If I've got stoned parents, if I've got drunk parents, if I've got high parents, I actually don't want them paying attention to their kids, do I? I want them, like the kids over at a babysitter's house, far, far away from any illegal activities until everything's completely wore off and then, you know, said parents can guiltily retrieve their children.
You would not believe how many functioning addicts we have dealt with. Just because a parent uses doesn't mean they're going to neglect their kids. We have some...
Well,
it's actually harder to function some,
no, wait,
right?
Wait. But
it's
that
harder
is,
to function, but
hold on.
Some can do it.
A lot of, what is our, you know, one of our programs is alcohol and drug programs, treatment programs. One of the uses is alcohol. There's so many people that drink alcohol every day.
But they can function.
And they can function. And so a lot of people tend to forget, oh, it's only the drug. No. It's also alcohol. And they have to remember that alcohol causes great damage to your body and impairs you.
Oh, yeah.
But they drink it every evening, know.
And I'm sure it impairs their ability to parent.
Yes, it does.
So what we got, now we have smartphones. Let's just give all the kids smartphones, and every night they can rate their parents in terms of their neglectability or their abusability, and high enough score gets to CPS, and you guys can just come out the next morning.
Well, a lot of times when we get a call, we're asking the caller, okay, how is the drug use or the alcohol use affecting the parent's ability to parent? What are you seeing? What's happening? Because that's what makes it meet our criteria to be able to go out.
Because it's not necessarily neglect.
Not necessarily.
Certainly leans in that direction.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But we need to know the specifics.
What kind of stuff is drop dead for sure?
Drop dead for sure is if we have a sexual abuser in the home, we're going out.
Mm-hmm.
If we have physical abuse, if we have bruises on a child, we're
going
to go out.
So, going back, physical abuse. So if a parent spanks a child?
Spanking is not against the law unless you leave a traumatic condition on the child.
In other words,
bruising,
broken skin, bleeding,
that type of stuff. Spanking is, you can do it.
Because that's what, you know, kids today say, you cannot hit me. I'm going to call the cops on you.
Now, there's a difference between hitting and spanking.
Okay, spanking. Okay, well, the spanking. Well, that's what they say, you know.
Spanking is typically done in the buttocks area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you can use something other than the hand, but we suggest, when parents call in, we suggest they be very careful. I had a case a few months ago where a parent was spanking a child with a belt, and of course the child was wailing and moving. The parent accidentally let go of the buckle. The buckle came around and slapped the child in the face and chipped his tooth. Oh. Now, we're going to go out on that.
Yeah.
You know, so we ask the parents to please be careful and think about what you're doing before you do it if you're going to spank your child with something like a belt.
You take all the fun out of spanking.
You
think about
no,
it.
No,
I mean,
no,
think
no.
Think about it. I'm
Wait,
not going to do it.
You do it one of those, like, with a rolled paper. You know,
what, like
not a
naughty dog thing.
Yeah, exactly. It just, you know, just a one piece of newspaper, not the rolled one, but just like a one. It just makes noise. It's not really hitting. It just makes noise.
Yeah.
Use that.
Yeah, that's clever.
Well, yeah.
My kids are too old. They're too sophisticated. This is not, once you've gone past a certain point, you can't get it back.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that parents today are scared and afraid of disciplining the children because, you know, if I spank them, or some of them use a hit, but they really mean spanking. They're afraid of doing that because they're afraid of, you know, CPS is going to come and take their children away. Especially, I've heard a lot, and we're having a lot of problems with parents who are here illegally, and their children are U.S. born. They're afraid of disciplining their children because they're not aware of the laws or what they can do, and their children are running rampant.
We deal with illegal aliens all the time.
But they're so afraid of coming, you know, of doing anything.
Any government contact.
Yeah, they're afraid of
like
even
we're
disciplining.
Arizona or something,
exactly.
You know?
They're afraid of disciplining their children because, you know, they don't know. They're not aware. And they're afraid that, you know, if they go to you, you're going to call on immigration. And
we can't.
And or, you know, the kids say, you here in the United States, you cannot hit me. You can't spank me because, you know, I'm going to call. And, you know,
no, the kids could probably call immigration.
No, yeah, exactly.
The kids can, we can't. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that our workers, our ER workers that go out and do the investigations, when they go out and talk to these parents and find out that they are illegal and they have these fears, they talk to them and they educate them on their rights and what they are still able to do mm-hmm. and that they are still able to parent and discipline their children without ramifications.
And, you know, the only why I'm saying this is because we have parents mm-hmm. who have said that, you know, I'm afraid. I can't, you know, right here in the United States, I can't, you know, it's against the law to, you know, spank slash hit my child.
Does that bring us up to culture? I mean, are there cultural boundaries that come into play here with physical correction of childhood misbehavior?
In some cases, yes, there is. And some cultures seem more accepting of it than others, so we just try to put the fine line for the parents and let them know, okay, disciplining
here's
is one thing.
Here's the rule book.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, here's what you can do. This is how far you can take it before it goes to abuse. So you have to be careful on that fine line.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave the marks. Don't break the skin. You know, you can spank.
No bruising.
No bruises.
Know.
Yeah. You know, so we try to let them know and educate them on what they can do.
I just want to point out that I won't let any spanking parents adopt me, okay? Just so we were clear on that. I mean, really,
I was,
seriously,
you know,
which kid, what
I
kid
was
wants
only,
to be spanked?
I was
Come
only
on.
Spanked slash it once, but I deserved it.
Yeah.
And I even know that. I was growing up. Yeah, I deserved that one.
Regardless.
But it worked. But yeah, but it only happened once I learned my lesson. You know, just.
And I've gotten calls from teenagers saying, oh, my parents slapped me. And I'm like, okay, and? You know, what was happening? What was going on? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, sometimes we'll send those out to, like, our preventative services.
So the heat of the moment kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where you don't have a pattern of abuse. You have a
it's
blow.
It's a one-time thing.
And,
yeah.
And people just got weird for a moment.
Yeah.
And then you can go out and say, hey, don't get weird. And typically for those one-time offenders.
We close it.
So there's kind of this trying, because you've got limited time and attention.
Yes, we do.
So you have to figure out where that safety need is for that time and attention and really put the emphasis on that.
Yes. That way we can keep the child's safety and well-being intact with their family whenever possible.
Nice.
That's our goal.
Nice. So everybody should report all child abuse, and then you will be able to manage it in terms of how much help it needs to stop being an abusive situation, if mm-hmm. in fact it was one.
Yes.
Okay. Ooh, that sounded good.
It's crazy.
Write that down. That's our mission
statement. I know.
That
was a good
That's
one.
Our mission statement.
Yeah.
Okay. So clearly you've got some very serious cases that require, and you mentioned sexual abuse, you mentioned physical abuse where there's clear indications of
mm-hmm.
of trauma. You used mm-hmm. the word trauma. You mentioned drug abuse as being 80% of the calls responsible.
Mm-hmm.
What's typically going on in a drug-using household that leads to a substantiated referral.
Neglect, right? You said that
a lot of the drug use is neglect. It's going to be the dirty house where we go in. There's mold. There's dirty dishes. There's, you know, the house is basically
looks like somebody's going to college, basically.
Worse than that.
Without kids.
I've actually walked into a house where there was literally paths in the house because there was so much junk, and they had like little places where you could step over into a clean patch where you could let somebody pass by. There was maggots
like
in the
sink. Like an uphill drive on a two-lane road.
Pretty much. So
it's,
I mean,
like the show's Hoarders. Have you seen that show on
yeah. That's basically what the house
I'm actually
is
downloading every show and hoarding the shows. So,
you know, that's one of the worst cases that I've seen.
I can't.
So, and then it ended up being that they were actually manufacturing meth in that house.
What is it? I mean, you know, well, you said 80% is drug use. What is the drug of choice that you've seen a lot of parents, that kids are being taken away?
Meth.
So, but, you know, if we look at drug prevalence rates, we know that meth isn't the most popular drug by any stretch of the imagination. It's clearly alcohol.
Yeah.
Probably secondly, cannabis.
Yeah, marijuana.
So meth is at least running a distant third. It's somewhere down on heroin in terms of popularity. Well, because, you know, meth is not cool. I mean, I know cool people, and they tell me convincingly, no, since way not cool. I mean, if you're using it, you don't claim it in public because people frown, right?
Yes, they do.
You don't get, like, street proper credit or cred for, you know, using meth. So it's not that popular. So it's because it's not popular, it's not that many people using it, that it results in the majority of CPS calls indicates that it's really harmful and really makes it hard to parent.
Yes, it does. I've heard a lot from my clients, oh, I thought I'd try it once, and, you know, that was it, and they ended up hooked.
You know, I've known people that have, their lives have been just completely destroyed because of the meth use. Not the drug, not the alcohol, not the marijuana, but the meth use.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, once they tried that meth, it just went downhill. I mean, people who were well off and lost completely everything.
So methamphetamine use is sticky. It grabs you and sucks you up into the vacuum of bad things.
And when kids are involved,
and then B, it's hard to function on it.
Yes.
So.
And I think that's where a lot of people can function on alcohol. And they can do that daily, and it impairs their lives, but it doesn't impair them to the point where it becomes abusive. Whereas with meth,
or it's quieter abuse. I would even go that way.
Oh, really? Yeah. I would think that it would, because a lot of people who get, you know, are under the influence of alcohol get very aggressive. Some of them get very aggressive.
Some get aggressive, some get very tender and loving.
Yeah. Or
I've heard kids tell me that the only time my dad will give me a hug is when he's drunk.
One of the best essays I ever read was written in, like, 1673 about the 8 different types of drunks. And it was a really good essay because, the people who sing in the middle of the night and the people who get in fights. And, you know, but I would say, you know, when I'm talking about more quiet forms of neglect, I would say how many kids come in the morning with incorrect homework because their parents were having their evening cocktail, beer, thingamajig, and didn't sit down and take the time and attention to correct it. Bam. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Quiet abuse, quiet neglect.
Yeah.
But when the parent is using meth, it's more more apparent. You know, the kid comes in dirty, dirty clothes, not fed.
Cheetos are food, okay?
And you know what? And it's true because when we had the perinatal program open, you know, a lot of the mothers were, most of them were meth users, right?
Yes.
I mean, when I was there, and the kids would come in with them, and they were like dirty, hungry, and they didn't smell too good.
And see, a lot of our clients were the ones that were in your perinatal program.
Yeah, and then once they graduated, from perinatal, you could see the difference of the kids. Yeah. Actually, the kids' behavior changed. When they would come in, they were wild kids, just wild and hungry, dirty, stinky. But when they graduated, they were clean, fed. And it was, I mean, perinatal was, we were hoping to open it up again, but it was great because, you know, public health would go in, they would show the moms how to cook, you know, on a limited budget.
Life skills.
Yes, and, you know, we had our little daycare for the kids, gave them snacks, showed them how to play together. It was great. I love that program.
Perinatal infomercials,
yes,
brought to you by your kind friends at Imperial County Behavioral Health.
But yes, most of the women that were there is because, you know, the kids were about to be taken away, or they had just gone back, reunified, or they were at, you know, or were at risk.
CPS.
Or some of them were taken away, and CPS workers would bring their kids to the perinatal program to supervise while the moms were there. So
after the break, we're going to jump into CPS, how they change lives for people's betterment. And we'll be back with Loretta Grenier, social worker, right after this break. This is Let's Talk About It, sponsored by Imperial County Behavioral
Health. You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You're still listening to your weekly wellness radio. What did you say it was called? The Worth Listening?
Wellness Worth Listening To.
When we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7, Radio Bilingue, our phone number here at the station is area code 760-337-8874. And you can also access this show and past shows on our podcast at kxoradio.com.
And if you're a fan of the soundtrack, it's because you believe, like we do, that life's soundtrack should have a tight horn section.
And if you haven't noticed, it's a different intro music. This is our old intro music.
Da-na-na-na.
The right, Brazilian one is on vacation this week.
Loretta Grenier, welcome back. Social worker, Department of Social Services, Child Protective Services, all things Child Protective Services. So you guys aren't like really mean people who relish torturing families and children. You actually want kids and families to be healthy and safe and productive and grow up to be
safe,
great citizens of this county, helping everyone else be great citizens, right?
Yes, that's our goal.
And that's the safe part of it is it's important, healthy and safe.
Yes.
And it's especially, and to be with their family,
yes,
right?
We want the family intact whenever possible. Mm-hmm. That way the kids don't lose their heritage, they don't lose their family traditions, they don't lose those ties.
Well, and separating kids and families hasn't shown to be very helpful to anyone.
Yeah.
Not the kids, not the families. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's only done when it has to be done for safety.
Yes.
And then it's done knowing that that's probably not helping. I mean, you may still get a good outcome, but it's not necessarily helping it. So how do we, once you go in with work with families, how do you get them on paths to safety, paths to reunification?
Depending on what our investigators find when they go out there, they note the key areas of where the family needs help, whether it be drug and alcohol, they need to get into rehab, they need to get clean and sober, family counseling, whether it's life skills they need. They've also implemented up in our front end in our investigations end a family group conferencing implemented that, where the parent actually identifies people that are important in their life and important in the children's life, and there's a big meeting where everybody gets together and says, okay, this is what I've seen, this is what I think could help, this is what I'm willing to do. That way we get support around the parent during this time.
Is that typically
good.
Community members more than agency people? Who ends up in those meetings? What's it look like?
It depends on the parents.
So it's up to the parent. It's who the parent decides who's going to be there.
Yes.
But before you get there, what if, again, you said 80% is because of drugs and alcohol.
Yes.
What do you do for that family member, or if both parents are involved in drugs, to get them? Because you need to deal with the issue of their drug use before you even get to the family conferencing.
Well, a lot of times in the family group conferencing, drug testing, rehab, whether the parent's going to do inpatient, whether it's going to do outpatient, a lot of that stuff is discussed right there. And then we have family members that'll step up and say, okay, you know what, if mom's going to go to inpatient, you know, I'll go ahead and try to get relative placement of the kids.
So it's kind of concurrent.
Yeah, it kind of goes hand in hand.
Okay.
That way we get the parent supported and the kids supported. That way, hopefully, we get the best outcome for the family.
And how much time do you have to get, you know, because it's government, and we're always, you know,
a lot of
how much you can do. Just like CalWORKs, you have this so much time to do this. And
if we're going to remove kids, if we're going to be placing them outside the home, and we're going to be doing court cases, we're on time frames from the get-go. We're on time frames from when we take the kids to filing our petition, to our detention, to our jurors hearing. to, I mean, there's time frames for everything. And then we basically have 18 months to work with this family and try to get them stabilized and get this child in a permanent placement from the time the case started.
So you say stabilized. That doesn't necessarily say completely recovered. Is there an understanding that sometimes recovery takes longer than that?
Oh, yeah. But as long as we get the parent to where they're stable and they're able to care for their kids, we can implement other outside agencies that can then follow the family through when we have to let go. Like if parents are in drug and alcohol, or if they're in counseling, we can leave the parent with that service and they can continue with that service with somebody else watching when our time frame's up.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned briefly in the first half of the show, like 6 months of family maintenance. Is that over and above this 18-month window?
No, we have 18 months total.
If to
we're
step away from the case,
to step
period.
Away.
So one year, 12 months, and then 6 months of maintenance.
Yeah, we have basically from the time our case starts to a permanent plan, we have 18 months. Permanent plans for the children can be adoption, they can be legal guardianship, mm-hmm. It can be long-term foster care. From the time our case starts till we reach that permanent plan, we typically have 18 months, and that's it.
How many cases do you have like that right now in the Valley?
Oh, we have more than you would want to know.
Really?
Yeah.
How many social workers are there?
We probably have, I would say, easily 45 social workers that are carrying, on an average, 20 to 30 cases each.
40 times 30, 1,200-ish.
So.
Families.
We deal with a lot of families. We deal with a lot of kids.
And the thing is, it's just not one person. It affects everyone in that family. Everyone. So you can deal, it's 30 to 40 cases, or how many do you say social worker?
20 to 30 right now. We're low.
Yeah, and let's say it's 30, and each family has 4 members or 5 members in that family. That's a lot.
It's crazy because not only are we dealing with mom and her 2 kids, and the 2 kids will each be 1 case, mm-hmm. but we're also contacting, if they're in behavior health, we're contacting the behavior health to see how mom's doing in services. If they're in counseling with a private counselor, we're contacting that person to see how they're doing, coordinating the drug testing, coordinating visits if the children are not placed with their parents. So there's a lot that goes on to try to keep that connection with the parents and the children. And then sometimes we do have big families that have, 6 kids, and we don't have foster family homes that can house that many kids. So we're having to split up kids into different homes and then trying to do sibling visits so the kids keep their family ties too. During all while we're trying to get mom and dad stable and get them clean and get them to the point where we can return the kids and the kids' safety and well-being will be intact with their parents.
I got a question for you.
I got all lost there.
Dr. Pablo, I'm dropping Pablo Stewart.
Oh, Pablo Stewart.
Dr. Pablo Stewart, the founder of the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, came down and offered a training once at IVC for behavioral health and everybody else in the health
and community.
No, it was
at Barbara Worth.
I remember. I was sitting in, formerly Barbara Worth, whatever it is
it's
now.
It's still Barbara Worth. They just opened.
Anyway, one of the things he said was that, if you've got a woman whose kids are removed and she's using methamphetamine, you've got somebody who's been traumatized and in all likelihood has post-traumatic stress disorder. How successful are you at breaking through that barrier and getting people access to mental health treatment? Because clearly you can jump in and say, you have to stop using drugs today. But if the whole reason that they're using drugs is to survive the haunting of a traumatic, abusive, neglectful, filled life themselves, how successful are you at getting the person to say, oh, geez, I need mental health help, and then, B, dialing them into that?
That's what our investigators do. They go out and they talk to the parents. And it's not just a one-time, okay, you're using, let's do this. Our investigators go out there and meet with the parents on numerous occasions, try to find out what exactly is going on, and then that's where the family group counseling comes into place. Okay, what's happening in this woman's life that maybe made her do this? What services do we all, does everybody think would help benefit this parent?
But see, here the trick to that one is A, the avoidance is a symptom. Right, a post-traumatic stress disorder. So the person who has post-traumatic stress disorder really doesn't want to say that they have it or even acknowledge it in their own heads.
That's why we get this.
And if you've got grandma in the room, and if you've got grandpa in the room, and if you've got the husband in the room who may have contributed to this in some weird way, then you've got a bunch of people in the room who really don't want this to be a post-traumatic stress problem.
But that's why we let the mother, who's the one that we're focusing on, right, pick the people that are going to be there for her.
Right. But again, she may want to avoid the truth that post-traumatic stress has haunted her to the level where she's using methamphetamine to the point where her children are being removed in a Hispanic culture where Mexican mothers are supposed to jump in front of the bus, frankly. You know, where it's so culturally normed to take care of your kids to the point where you sacrifice your life.
Some of it comes out after having therapy, you know, halfway through therapy or it finally comes out that, you know, they've experienced this. But that's after building a really good alliance, you know, somebody that they can trust. And sometimes it doesn't come out.
And you've got this short time window, and you've got methamphetamine in the room, which is going to, you know, which basically says pay a lot of attention to me, which means get them, you know, go to residential treatment right away. Now, in residential treatment, they're going to focus on substance use. And they may or may not, I'm not really monitoring them on a day-by-day basis, but they may or may not have any interest at all in identifying people's trauma or seeking mental health care and counseling. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that may end up being problematic down the road in terms of...
I think it's just a very difficult... It's a very difficult recovery situation when you're dealing with 80% of the... kids are being removed because of the neglect, because of their parents using drugs, and trying to put, you know, a little, like everything we do here, take this pill, you'll feel better.
Yeah.
Take it and everything is going to be okay.
We do have some parents that have been duly diagnosed, and those are more difficult to work with because you are having to take the mental health aspect into consideration as you're trying to help get them clean and sober and get off the drugs when they've depended on that drug to medicate themselves for years.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. You've got a chicken and egg thing going on.
Exactly. And then you have also the children you have to deal with.
Exactly.
You know, the trauma being removed from the parents, even though they were being neglected, that's all they've known. That's, you know, their mom and dad. Yeah, that's what they know, and they love their parents, and you know, just taking them out, and how do you deal with that trauma with the kids? And
that's why we try to get them back with relatives as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. We realize there is going to be trauma to the kids, but we try to decrease that wherever we can. We try to get family visits going with, like, if an aunt stepped up to the plate and I said, you know what, I'm willing to take these children. While the aunt's going through the process, we try doing weekend visits. We try having the aunt go out to the receiving home, pick up the kids. That way the children know they weren't forgotten, that there is family out there.
Is it hard to find safe family members sometimes? Because these things tend to run in packs.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes we can go to the fifth degree of relation, I believe it is, to be able to place a child.
You know, Justin Bieber is my nephew in the fifth degree.
So what is the fifth degree of relation?
We have a chart,
checks any day now.
And we follow it. And how are you related and this and that.
Oh, wow.
That way we can place legally with relative placements.
Wow. Fifth. Hmm.
If the person's willing, if they're connected, if there's some sort of agreement there. So it's not, that must be a difficult, I mean, that job in and of itself must
be. We have a licensing unit that deals with relative placements and licensed foster care. Because before we could place with relatives and it wasn't a real big issue, but now relative foster homes have to meet state licensing requirements just like a licensed foster home.
So you've got locational safety in terms of the licensing requirements for the place. You've got
background check.
Relatives who may or may not be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Who may be willing. So your willing people may be safe, unsafe.
Yeah. Yes.
And your safe people may be unwilling.
Exactly. Yeah. And that has happened.
Oh, I'm sure. It must be enormous. It's like calculus.
And it's hard because I have friends that taken in nephews, nieces, because, you know, the parents were, again, drug users, and they were receiving treatment in San Diego, residential or something like that. And right now, but they stayed with these kids for almost a year.
Yeah.
And they grew attached to them, and the kids had graduated. And then, okay, parents come back. Okay, here are your kids back. And now our friends are just like, we miss them. You know, we still miss them. It's just that detachment and just you get attached to them and then, okay. So it also happens to them.
We had tattooed their names across our backs.
Exactly. And a lot of times, you know, we'll get foster parents that just want to adopt. And that's difficult because I can think of on my hand the number of times that a mother has walked away from a baby, safely surrendered their baby at the hospital.
Which speaks to the cultural pull of parents to children. I mean,
exactly. But then you have these parents that only want to adopt, but we have to offer the mom services. So it becomes I don't want you to take the baby away.
Anytime you're investing in services, the goal of those services is to reunify the family.
Exactly.
So that's ultimately what you're always playing for anytime you're playing that game.
Yeah.
You're not playing it to lose. To invest 18 months of time and effort and resources and social worker stuff to get to the end of the thing and say, it's a no-go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be rare and unusual, I'm assuming.
It is. But if a child's under 3, our time frames are different. We only have 6 months to reunify that parent. At 6 months, the parent has to have completed a majority of the case plan that's been court-ordered by the court. They have to have completed a majority of that in order to get the extended services.
Why 3-year-olds? Why?
But, I mean, for somebody like a mother who's a drug user, 6 months is sometimes not enough. It takes about 9 months to a year.
As long as they complete a majority, like they're doing their parenting classes, if that was court-ordered, they're doing their drug testing and they're testing clean most of the time, as long as they're doing a majority of it, we can extend it. If they're not doing a majority of it, then we have to go in front of the judge and explain to them why we're going to offer this mom 6 more months of services if she's not doing what she needs to do now. Because the goal is to get that child into a permanent plan as quick as possible.
Because they're young and they're bonding.
Because they're young, exactly.
And it's more important for young kids to have stability sooner, faster?
No. I think part of the reason they set the age at 6 months for under 3-year-old is because the bonding processes that take place when the kids are so young.
Attachment.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying, the bonding, yeah.
Now, of course, that being said, you've got young, brand new parents who get in trouble, who freak out and go on mad binges. Right? I mean, would that be, I'm thinking about your possible reactions to having your children taken away because you were using drugs, and one of those reactions is, oh my goodness, run, drug.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I can't believe this is happening.
Or, you know, it could be, you know, the kids get removed.
On a 6-month timeline.
No. Or it could be that, you know, the kids are removed and
it's a wake-up call.
It's a wake-up
call,
you know, and they'll try anything and everything.
It's a wake-up call, you're good because it's a wake-up call. You're awake.
Yeah.
But if a young parent panics, which, you know, we're all human. Oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening, and disappears for 2 months while they're sorting themselves out or whatever, hoping it'll all go away, using more drugs to hopefully, like, I'm going to wake up one day and my kids are there.
And that's why people use drugs.
That's why we call it maladaptive coping. It's because it doesn't work. But that happens, I'm assuming.
Oh, I'm sure it does. When our workers go out there and they're doing a removal, they do give the parents the information from the courts, the JV stuff that they have to give them, and it explains it right there. So we're hoping that when we go out there, they don't, I mean, I'm sure they get scared, I'm sure they panic, but we're hoping that it's like, okay, wait a minute, I need to get my budding gear.
See, recognizing this, you guys go in there,
yes,
realizing that you've got skittish people and you're trying not to frighten them away.
Exactly. We're trying to get them to open up to the services. We're trying to get them to open up and realize, hey, you know what, maybe
we can't afford to lose 2 months here.
Exactly.
Well, we can't afford not to do anything because kids are involved. And if those kids don't get the services, you know, they don't intervene, then we're going to have to deal with them later on in life as adolescents, as adults. You know, just it's.
There's some fascinating data I've been looking at and sharing around my department. You even shared some with social services on adverse childhood experiences, and all of which basically are reportable as CPS at some level. You know, some of it's like low-level stuff that probably wouldn't be substantiated, like having a grouchy, angry parent most of the time. You know, you guys probably wouldn't even get those calls. But they count for points. And what the research says is that if you've got X number of points, you are at way, 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 way higher risk levels for all sorts of what we would commonly call negative criminal types of outcomes, for starters. But also behavioral health outcomes and also regular health outcomes. So heart disease, diabetes, oh, it's tied to how you were treated as a child, amazingly enough. You know, you'd love to think it was just the donuts and, you know, fast food. but it may be contributing to that. But what they found out is that children who endure tough childhoods with drug-using parents, with angry parents who hit them a lot, with people who don't pay attention to them or punish them a lot, moving around, you even get a point for separation divorce. So if that's happened in your life, you know, I'm a child of divorce, you get a point for that. But what they've shown is that the high point totals equal really, really poor health outcomes across the board, everything, and ultimately early death. So when you guys are saying that you're playing for important outcomes, you're not kidding, because yeah. These kids' lives are at stake.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably it's great that you're there helping and you know, bringing what you can to mitigate that and get that to get on track as easily as possible.
So, as quick as possible. Yeah.
And so with that said, if, you know, also the community, everybody, what is it, takes a village to raise a village. Yeah. You know, it's if there's community members that are concerned, should they be calling CPS? You know, if
call
they see
us.
Something, if so what number?
They can call. Our hotline number is area code 760-337-7750. There's two of us that answer that hotline.
Wait, I was fumbling for my pencil. What was that number?
760-337-7750.
Okay.
That's the hotline number.
337-7750.
And there's typically two of us that answer the line during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for the entire county.
Okay. Wow.
Is that line ringing?
Like, it rings. On some days, it's ringing so much we'd like to blow the thing up. And on some days, we're actually a little quiet and we can actually input everything we got. So it varies widely, and it also varies whether there's schools going on or summertime. Summertime is actually slower for us because we do get, I guess, kids are more out and about and being seen by people when they're in school.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Especially, well, teachers. Teachers are very important.
Teachers, principals, schools, counselors, school nurses. We get a lot of calls from school nurses on kids that are being sent to them because they're not feeling well. And then it turns out, oh, I was up all night last night because my parents were arguing and there was domestic violence going on in the home. So you'd be surprised how many calls we actually get from school nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, you know, mandated reporters are legally required to report, and they should never blink on that one, because there's a reason stuff like that is, you know, community safety. And what we said is kids who are going through these tough lives have short, nasty lives. That's what the research says. So you can't be complicit in this. But even I think more importantly, if you're not mandated, you shouldn't be complicit.
If you have a doubt, call us. Call us, talk to us, tell us what's going on. We'll try to get as much information from you as we can, and then we can go from there. Yeah, that's the best thing we can do.
The sooner we make a difference, the better, always.
Exactly.
It's never good to wait.
Exactly. We're talking about kids.
Thank you for coming aboard today. How is this for you?
Interesting.
You're just dying to come back.
We went all over the place.
Yes, we did.
Well, it's a big, you know, it's a big thing, and it's a really important part of the community. And I thank you for coming aboard today and kind of presenting it in a way that didn't scare us more. Right?
Good. Yes.
Yes.
Seriously.
I hope not.
And I hope we get information for parents, you know.
Well, if parents have any questions, we have parents that will call us, you know, oh, well, you know, I've got this going on with my child, blah, blah, blah. We'll try to direct them where they can get services, what they can do. We have grandparents that call. We have all kinds of calls that come into our hotline all the time. If you have any questions or anything, call us, talk to us. We'll try to guide you the best way we can.
If they say they heard about it on Let's Talk About It, can they get like a free T-shirt or something?
I don't think we have
T-shirts. Just good information, right? Just good information.
They can get some good information.
337-7750.
All right. Catch us on podcast. Make sure and give it to your people. Make sure and keep our community safe. Thank you for coming aboard, Loretta.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. On behalf of Maria, I'm Mario on the board. I'm Scott. Have a great weekend. Take care. Catch us next week.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It. Heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.